On 1116 SEN, evenings with Finey. For Alan Mance, don't lose your pants, call 1-800-ALAN-MANCE.
Oh, they played that loud and proud because, of course, on the weekend, St Kilda had their greatest ever comeback in the club's history. 55 down against Footscray, turned it around, or the Western Bulldogs, for a victory. And our special guest tonight would have played in many a game where 55 points was only the start of the bad news. It was a tough era for the Saints in the 50s, and they had just begun to unearth a group of players that had the potential to go somewhere when in 1957, one of their number, Brian Gleeson, won the Brownlow Medal. It was a point, a moment of great pride for St Kilda supporters who'd enjoyed precious little since 1939. That joy was to be short-lived when it came to Brian Gleeson because it was to be his last season of AFL, or then VFL football. But we can relive all of that and more tonight as our special guest is the 1957 Brownlow medalist, Brian Gleeson. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening.
First of all, as a Saints man to my bootstraps, it's a great privilege to be able to speak to the 57 Brownlow medalist. And I was mentioning before the break, almost a mythical figure amongst Saints fans, and trotted out with names like Bill Stevenson and John McIntosh as footballers of great ability that never completed their careers at St Kilda because of injury. I guess hard luck is part of the equation when you only win one flag in about 130 years.
It is, yeah. I can't sort of comment on that other than to say that there's a certain amount of bad luck as with football, and medical capability was less in those days, so some of the players who could have been resurrected today were probably forced out of the game.
Oh, so true. Isn't it funny, today they've got variations on how to repair a knee.
Yeah.
In 1950, they didn't have a single notion.
Yeah, so they were pretty good at cutting the knee open. I've got five scars to prove that.
It's Jeff Poulter, Brian. Yeah. How are you?
Jeff, isn't
it? Yes, how are you?
Fine, thanks, Jeff.
Just talking about your knee, and we'll go back to the start in a minute, but was it a similarity between your knee injury and Coleman's knee injury? Was it pretty similar type of... Are you able to tell us whether it was a similar injury?
No, look, the honest fact is I don't know what was the state of John Coleman's knee, but, you know, the end result was the same. We, neither of us could get back into the game because there wasn't enough skill around at the time to do the repairs. Yes.
So let's go back to a time when the body was fighting fit, and you were recruited from Berrigan, but ended up in Berrigan, am I right in saying, because of your father's choice of employer and the way that the family made a living?
Yes, well, whilst I was at boarding school in Ballarat, in my last year, my parents bought a hotel in Berrigan, and they went up there. And when I finished year 12, I went to Berrigan, worked in the hotel while I waited an appointment to the Commonwealth Public Service in Melbourne. And while I was there, I did pre-season training under Les Foote, who was coach of the Berrigan Football Club. You'd remember Les as a champion for North Melbourne, and regularly played for Victoria. He was captain of North Melbourne, so he was a big name in the Murray League as a result of his going to Berrigan. Yeah.
Of course,
Les wanted to get back. Les didn't like living in the country, to be honest. He was a city boy, and he had a 2-year contract. And after that, he wanted to get back to Melbourne. So he took a few people from Berrigan down to have a run at St Kilda to ingratiate himself, and it worked. You know, he got me signed up, and he finished up getting the job himself as captain coach the following year after I joined.
Did any other of the Berrigan recruits, did any of them do well at all?
Not at that time, no. No. You might remember that a lot of very good players left the VFL, what about 1950? Because a rule was made that when they'd got to age 28 and played 100 games, they qualified to get an open clearance. And there was a real rush on those sort of players from country football clubs. And this was a time when people like Bill Stevens of Fitzroy and Bob Rose of Collingwood and Les Foote of North Melbourne moved out and received what was seen as lucrative contracts to become captain coaches in their respective places to where they went. The Coulter Law at that time provided that nobody got paid other than one fee for playing football, and that was £5 a game. And the champions at the time thought, well, that wasn't enough. You know, they were paying bigger money than that in the Victorian Football Association and other places, they prevailed on the league to make that rule about the 28 years and 100 games. And I know Les, for example, went to Berrigan on £25 a week, plus a job, plus a free house. And in the days when, I suppose the average wage of a person per year would have been around about $700 or $800, that was a magnificent improvement on the sort of money he would have been earning in Melbourne.
Yes, I remember Fred Franning telling me, Brian, that he went to Hamilton. I think he got, if you counted the job and the coaching job, and he married the daughter of the town's number one citizen and had the best job in the town at the factory or whatever. I think he got something like five or six times more than he would have got playing for Melbourne.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it went. And it's changed a bit these days, hasn't it?
£5. No, they get a bit more these days, Brian.
I believe they do, yeah. I haven't seen any of it.
I think the Coulter law's gone by the wayside.
Yeah.
Brian, the fact that you ended up at St Kilda was interesting, given that your brother, only a year older than you, had made his way down to Melbourne. Now, it's an interesting notion. We've seen brothers obviously play together, but you both would make your debut in 1953, and was there ever a thought, because I believe you might have gone down to Melbourne earlier than you were at St Kilda, was there ever a thought of inviting younger brother Brian down to play with Terry?
Terry, as you call him, he was Gerald by name.
That's the other thing. It's Gerald Gleeson.
Gerald. No, we called him Jerry.
Yeah.
Some reporter got it wrong on the first meeting.
called him Terry. Well, sorry.
And it was Terry ever after. Anyway, my parents lived in Melbourne for a couple of years before going to Berrigan. They were farmers originally in Western Victoria. But when they were in Melbourne, he had left school and he played with Melbourne thirds, as they were called in those days, so the under-19s, along with blokes like Barassi and Case and Williams and so forth, people who were to become part of the very strong Melbourne team of that era or the following era. And he went up to Berrigan with the parents and they invited him back down. In fact, Checker Hughes, coincidentally, also owned a hotel in Berrigan.
Really?
And he came up to see his hotel and he came around to our pub and he asked Gerald to come back and have a run, you know, see if he can get in the seniors, to which he agreed. And he asked me, do you play football? I said, a little bit. And he said, well, how old are you? I said, 18. He said, well, why don't you come down and play in the thirds and be with your brother? And I thought that was pretty good, but I got less foot. Changed my direction by taking me down to St Kilda. And they offered me the first five games at centre-half forward if I signed tonight. One of those sort of deals. And I mean, it doesn't say that I was good enough for that. It just says that's what happened. They didn't have much wisdom, but it worked out okay in the end.
I think you might have said you played in the seconds at Berrigan.
I actually played a couple of games during the school holidays at Berrigan,
So seconds at Berrigan to centre-half forward as a Gilda.
Yeah, but I only lasted 15 minutes in that position. Quarter time, the coach Colin Williamson moved me out to the forward flank, and in front of what was the old St Kilda Cricket Club stand. And in very short time, I heard a voice as clear as a bell yell out, "Get back to Berrigan, you mug, Gleeson." And the problem was, he was right. You know, I was playing like a mug. And, yeah, so I finished up in the seconds for the next four games before I got back in the first. Yeah.
It would actually be 3 years, even though yourself and Jerry made your debuts in 1953. It would be till 1955 until you played in a game against him. Did the parents come down or family come down and watch you play? And what happened on that? What happened on that afternoon? Split allegiances, guess.
There was a bit of publicity about that, I think, and a photo made the press, whereas we're having a clash in the field at one time. But I can't remember how it worked out.
I'll tell you how it worked out. St Kilda kicked only one goal for the afternoon.
Hell.
If not for Neville Linney, there wouldn't have been a goal at all. So it was one goal. I mean, Melbourne only kicked six. But actually, that might have been in 57. That would have been the last time you two played. But in 55, they're pretty different stories. St Kilda won one game and Melbourne won a premiership. So did you have any regrets playing for St Kilda whilst your brother was playing in premiership teams?
Well, I felt he was on the better deal. And that's just the way life is, isn't it? Sometimes some people do well and other times others. I mean, Mother was very proud. She had a son who got two premiership medals and another one who got a Brownlow medal. She got the best of it all.
Just to confuse matters, Brian, whilst all this was going on and Jerry, maybe Terry to some, Gleeson was playing for Melbourne and Brian Gleeson was playing for St Kilda, Bill Gleeson also started playing for St Kilda.
Yes.
So there were...
I don't know whether you're aware of this, but his grandson is now playing for St Kilda in the person of Jack Sinclair.
Okay.
And Jack's mother is my granddaughter. And I was best man at Bill Gleeson's wedding.
All right, well, now I'm completely confused. I feel like I'm tied up in knots. Now, Bill...
But we weren't related.
We weren't related, but
we were good friends.
So Bill Gleeson's mother is related to you how?
She's not related.
Oh, no. Sorry, Jack Sinclair's... Oh, I'm too confused.
Well, Jack's mother...
Yeah, Jack Sinclair's mother...
...is Bill Gleeson's daughter.
Yes.
Okay.
First daughter. And I was best man at the wedding and godparent to mother. Yeah.
So Terry Jerry, what do we call him, was principally a ruckman, Brian. You started in other positions and ended up as a ruckman. Did you actually oppose one another as ruckman in a football match?
We did.
Right.
Yeah.
And how did that pan out?
Oh, fairly even, I think. Yeah. I mean, he was a bigger person, and I was a faster person. So we had different skills.
Yeah. You're 188, which is probably about it was tall enough for a ruckman in those days, wasn't it?
Yeah, or 6'2" and a half. And there were times I was the tallest man in the St Kilda team.
And that St Kilda team, whilst there wasn't a great deal of success in the 50s, there certainly were famous names both on and off the field, and you played with a man that would be one of the great coaches in football history. He was, now I don't know how far is Finlay from Berrigan?
Finlay would be about 12 or 13 miles from Berrigan.
Oh.
It's you wouldn't want to be dragged there by your ears, but close enough that when Alan Jeans arrived at the club, was there some sort of camaraderie based on geography?
I think so. Jenge and I became very good friends, actually. And I think I helped persuade him to stay when he was talking about not signing up or not coming. And we did a bit socially together with a few other country boys. We were all country kids, but a lot of us were country kids. And we were teammates together, and he was a good teammate. You know, he really put in, all the time, and I actually helped lead him into coaching, I do believe.
How did that transpire?
Well, after I finished, I wasn't able to play, and I tried for a couple of years, you know, to get right and to keep playing. I was offered the coaching of the seconds job, which I took. But also with my work, which was more important because that's where, you know, main income came from, of course. I was asked to take over a territory, or part of a territory, as part of my territory, to look after Tasmania. And I'd have to go there 3 weeks out of every eight. So I got Alan Jeans to help me coach the seconds. And then it proved to be impossible to coach on the basis of not able to be there, because I had also taken on a job on TV, the first TV panel show that was on ever on was called Polacco Inquest, on Channel 7, run by Michael Williamson, and he invited me to be part of his panel. I said, you know, that'd be okay, but I'd have to see, you know, I'd have to be at the St Kilda game every day. And he said, that'll be all right. But after a couple of weeks, that was changed. I had to go to a different game. So that really made him inappropriate to coach as well. It was a conflict of interest. So I got myself into a tangle there. So I had to give something up. I gave up the coaching and got Alan Jeans to take it over, and, you know, with the approval of Graham Huggins, the president, and so forth. And he finished the year doing that, did it well, and he was given the senior job the next year.
We're speaking with Brian Gleeson, St Kilda legend, and no other word for him, the esteem in which he is held.
Apart from Neil Roberts, the player I know best from that period, Brian, was Jim Ross. And he went down to Tasmania and was a wonderful player in Tasmania. He got an All-Australian at the 58 Carnival. And he, you would have had some good memories of him. And he was three-time best and fairest player before he was about 24.
Yeah, Jim was a really class player and a real good fellow too, Jim. And he was a great loss. He left St Kilda too early. He left about 25, I think. And but, you know, football didn't pay the wages in those days. And he was married and he had a child, I think, by that time. And he really wanted to look to his future. And that's why I believe he was susceptible to, you know, take a good offer interstate.
During that time, St Kilda were not bereft of quality players. Keith Drynan was an excellent footballer. There were a number of players who were blessed of great ability, but there was also a huge turnover. You would have played with an enormous number of players who probably didn't get to more than 10 or so games, I would have thought.
Yes, I'd say so. That'd be probably right. You know, the list tapered off in quality very quickly. Now, why that was so is probably they didn't have the recruiting skills. I think fellows like Graham Huggins and Alan Killigrew really changed the nature of St Kilda in terms of recruiting people and built better quality.
And Ian Drake, of course.
And Ian Drake, but he came later.
Later, yeah.
It was he did very well in helping to recruit people from Tasmania, like.
Burden Howe.
Yeah. Well, Burden was before him. Roy Apted, Lee, Bonnie.
Graham Lee, yeah.
Of course, Stuart and Baldock. Baldock had been in the pipeline for a long time, but we just couldn't get him over.
You're right about him being, and for Howe being too early, but he actually was at the City South Launceston Football Club, where Howe came from.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, he wasn't at St Kilda, you're right.
On the other hand, he was working against us because, you know, it took 2 years to get Vernon Howe out of Tasmania.
Yeah.
When you play for Tasmania in a state game or a carnival, you had to sign a form that you wouldn't leave Tasmania for 2 years.
Oh, is that what happened?
And that's why a lot of those great players didn't come. I mean, Verdon Howe, Tassie Johnson, they're about the beginning of a lot of good players, you know.
Yeah.
Brian, you mentioned Alan Killigrew, and he's known as the hot gospeler coach. He'd played for St Kilda in the late 30s, early 40s, and then returned to the club, and they say, I've actually got rare audio of him coaching, and it's a little bit distorted, but one can make out that there was a level of fervour that maybe we don't see in today's coaches. Can you tell us a little bit about the famous hot gospeler, Alan Killigrew?
Well, apparently as a player, he was a rover who was really always in there doing it, doing the tough work, and he was good enough to have won a best and fairest at St Kilda. As a coach, he sort of knew what he was talking about, and he made sense, and he was very much on about teamwork and using backing up principles and handball in a way that wasn't terribly popular at that time. So he led in a new era of energetic play, getting in for the ball, getting in pairs, having someone running past, getting the handball out and keeping the ball moving and stuff like that was a changing sort of a thing at the time.
And did it make sense to you, you being one of the...
Absolutely. I'd grown up with that at Ballarat. I mean, we had a rule that if you got the ball by any means on the forward line, be it picked up off the ground or got a free kick or got a mark, you played on immediately, and teammates surrounded you, went past you to enable that to happen. And we had a magnificent team at school, it was part of the best record of the college, say, over 50 years.
Interesting you say that, because unless you dig deep, the general impression of Killigrew was that he was the inspiring speaker. And
he was that too.
And that was rather than the science part of, the science part of the game.
No, he was ahead of the field in the science, as you're calling it, and he was a very motivational speaker. Yeah.
Brian, we need to take a break, but when we return, we're going to look at 1957 sharply in focus, the year in which you won the Brownlow Medal, and it would be the last year that you would play league football in, and also point out that by the end of that season, St Kilda easy beats for much of the 1950s were...
On 1116 SEN, evenings with Finey. For Alan Mance, don't lose your pants, call 1-800-ALAN-MANCE.
Welcome back. 1957 is a long time ago, but for Brian Gleeson, we will bring it back sharply into focus. It was the year that Brian Gleeson won the Brownlow Medal and that St Kilda finally began to show some form. And it all started happening, Brian, in round 13. At the end of round 12, St Kilda were in a familiar second-last position on the ladder, but round 13, they defeated Footscray, who were then third, and they would win four of their last five games, including a pretty famous game in round 18, your last ever game of league football, when Collingwood had to win and hope Essendon would be defeated by Carlton, who were above them in third, for the Pies to make the finals. They'd, of course, made the grand final in 56 and were expected to be a power in 57. And they say that maybe it was taken a little bit for granted that they would beat St Kilda, poor old St Kilda, and the question was whether Carlton could beat Essendon. But on that afternoon, St Kilda beat Collingwood by 7 goals. And just having a look at that team, Brian, you must have walked off the ground that day thinking the future wasn't too bad, playing alongside Bill Young, Brian Walsh, Neil Roberts, Munster Maloney. We've mentioned Jeansy, Jeff Feehan, Harold Davies, Bud Anand. We're all promising, John Coffey, all promising footballers. And I guess there would have been some optimism at the end of 57.
Yes, everything looked great. The future looked fantastic. And Killigrew was on top of the, his enthusiasm, and everything was moving in the right direction. You left out the name of Keith Drynan, who was our captain.
I apologise. He didn't play that afternoon. I'm looking at the team list, but of course Keith Drynan would be in front and centre in those thoughts.
He still had a bit of good football in him. He won the second best and fairest that year. Somehow or other, they allowed him to retire. I thought something went wrong there.
And then the next year, when you were injured, Brian, I assume that was an inter-club practice matches. In those days, you didn't play other teams in practice matches very often, did you?
No.
So where was it at, and what were the circumstances?
Well, it was at Olympic Park.
Really?
And it was the very first practice game of the season, and it was within 5 minutes of the start. So it went, you know, my situation went from being top rooster to feather duster in 5 minutes, you might say.
Was it just a ruck duel? How did it...
No. I think I was playing in a position like centre-half forward or something, and I was approaching the ball or just got it or something, and someone ran into my knee with his knee, and while I was propped, and it sort of knocked the knee about rather substantially. The young fellow who did it was a recruit, or what they call a eucalyptus thief, and that he came down to have a run with St Kilda and never made it. Whether they sent him home because of that, or whether he wasn't good enough, I'm not too sure.
The unnamed villain will remain unnamed,
but I'll leave him nameless. I've never met him again.
Yeah,
and whatever.
I mean,
it's
an enormous pity, because in 57 there are a couple of youngsters who made their debuts in 57 and would go on to be influential footballers, Alan Morrow and Lance Oswald,
and put in Bill Stevenson.
That's Bill Stevenson about to burst onto the scene.
Yes,
and all of a sudden the dark clouds were lifting at the Junction Oval, but. Before,
and Burden Howell came the next year.
Yeah, and there you go, and on it would go. And a team, of course, by 1961 that did make the finals. In 1961, you still would have been at the prime of your footballing career, and one can only guess. Well, when you have a look at even your birth date, when St Kilda won the flag in 66, indeed played in their first grand final in 65, in 65 you would have been 30 years of age, and it's far from impossible that had you not been lured back by something more than £5 a game, which would have been fair enough, we would have understood it, Brian, you could have been part of St Kilda's finest moments. And
well, I mean, that's extrapolating opportunity in what do we call...
spades.
Out there in the fairyland.
Well, it's what us St Kilda supporters do to try and turn one into something more substantial from grand finals. But tell us,
you use a bit of imagination if you're a St Kilda supporter, haven't you?
Exactly. Somehow, we've got to create something out of nothing. I think there was a Lightning Premiership we did well in 1 year, and I've included that. But the 57 Brownlow Medal, we know, of course, today it's the Night of Nights, and I'm sure Mrs Gleeson would have had a wonderful evening had it happened more recently. But back in 57, how did you find out that you'd won the Brownlow Medal?
I was at home, having got home late after work, and the phone rang, and a fellow I used to do a bit of part-time bar work with at the hotel in Albert Park was on the phone. He said, "You've won the Brownlow." I said, I couldn't have. It wouldn't be counted yet. And he said, "Well, they've counted the first votes, and you've got 6, 3s are 18, and Roy Wright and John James have got 12 each. They can't catch you." So I tuned in then, and I finished up getting a couple more seconds and a couple of thirds, so I finished up with 10 voting in 10 games for a total of 24 votes, and I think Roy Wright got 19 or 20. 20, that's right, and John James got 19.
Spot on. Perfect memory.
Yeah.
Now, Polts, being a great collector of little trivia facts from the world of football. How often has the first three in a Brownlow medal all been Brownlow medalists?
Yeah, that's unusual, isn't it?
Well, that's one I can't answer. But I can tell you this. You know, there were a number of commercial awards in those days by newspapers and people like the Palacco Inquest used to have a radio show which brought in a player from each team, you know, and at the end of the session, the player from St Kilda would vote for the three best players for the opposing side, say it was Richmond, and vice versa. So based on the votes of the opposing players by the representatives of the club at that radio show on Saturday night, they came up with the votes for the Palacco Inquest, and I fortunately won that too. And Federal Hotels had...
Don't tell me you won a shirt.
What's that?
I hope you won more than a Palacco shirt.
No, I got a bronze statue and 100 guineas. That was
that's all right.
Prize.
Yeah, that's okay.
Those days. And another one, Federal Hotels had a prize for two to go to Tasmania for a week at Worst Point Hotel. And Roy Wright and I drew on that. We both got the same. So they gave us each one.
You didn't I was worried you had to share a room with Roy.
What's that?
I thought they might make you and Roy share a room.
Well, they were a bit more generous than that.
That's good.
But there were other awards too, and they were won by either Roy Wright or John James. Nobody else got in the, you know, between the three of us, we collected everything that was going. So, you know, either we were lucky or the judges were of one mind, basically, you know, fairly close to one mind in that, you know, the three people who came first, second or third in the Brownlows were first, second or third in everything else too.
Brian, I rarely correct guests, but I'm forced to make a correction here. You weren't lucky. The three of you were great footballers, and that's our stepping off point. But just to highlight the quality of the win of Brian Gleeson, and by the way, that season with St Kilda still eighth on the ladder, certainly not a powerhouse, Harold Davies finished sixth in the voting. Or fifth.
I thought it was fifth, wasn't it?
Fifth. No, he finished fifth in the voting with 14 votes. And we've just received an SMS from Trapper saying, Harold Davies was my great uncle. Great to hear these stories as a long-suffering Saints fan. So it's great to have one of Harold's relatives ring in. But in closing, Brian Gleeson defeated Roy Wright, a dual Brownlow medalist,
yes,
was he?
Yes,
he had two in his cupboard already.
Mm. There you go. John James,
who was yet to win his,
a future Brownlow medalist. Taylor from South Melbourne.
Jim Taylor,
fine footballer. Harold Davies. Jim Beckwith of Melbourne.
John Beckwith,
of Melbourne.
Premiership back pocket.
In seventh position was another future Brownlow medalist, Kevin Murray.
Oh.
Sharing the position with him was the great Ted Whitten, Peter Pianto, and Jack Clark. So
great player. Jack
we're talking
Clark.
About a field of champions, bested that year by a champion who sadly would never play a game of football again. But Brian, we cannot thank you enough for joining us tonight. And you've shone light on an era long forgotten, but for St Kilda fans, now more fondly remembered. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Brian Gleeson, the 1957 Brownlow medalist, a gentleman, and by all reports of the day, truly a champion of the game. What a pity. Thanks, Pults.
Anytime, Vinny.
Going places, and you would have, I imagine, when the siren fell on the last game of 57, been pretty optimistic about yours and the club's future.